Welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast. It is your host here, Gareth McGlynn. As always, bringing you the latest pre-construction news and crack. I hope everyone had a great new year. I hope you enjoyed the holidays. It's hard to believe that we're 5 or 6 weeks, depending when you're listening to this, into January already. It seems like it's flown by, and it looks like we're going to have a hectic 2023. I'm really looking forward to it. Some exciting guests coming on, some exciting pre-construction tech to announce, some really good changes to the podcast. One thing that we've changed is we've had a little bit of fun to the podcast, and this is the first guest to get involved in the fun. It's simply 8 questions, quickfire questions at the end of the podcast, so stay tuned to the towards the end of the podcast to hear that. Today's guest, this is his second time on the podcast. The first time went incredibly well. His numbers, the downloads was off the charts. So I wanted to get him back on. I call him the mentality monster. It's none other than Chris Sammarco. He is the DPR lead for New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. Since 2021, he's grown his team exponentially, doubled in size, huge amount of revenue increase. And I want to get an idea from him, what is it like growing a team like that? Because it's not easy in the current market getting talent. How has he gone about it? How has he kind of cultivated his own culture? We talk about lots of things, including supply chain issues, price of materials, economic stability. We then go into detail for the younger folks or the people that are just getting into pre-con. What does it entail? What is it life? What does a typical day look like in the life of a pre-construction leader, along with much, much more? And don't forget about those 8 questions at the end, so stay tuned. Now, before we hear from Chris, let's hear from our main sponsor, Stuart Carroll from Beck Technology.
Hey everyone, I'm Stuart Carroll. I'm the president at Beck Technology. We are based in Dallas, Texas, and we are a pre-construction software company. We were founded in 1996, and we've really been focused on the world of pre-construction. We believe that pre-construction is where the biggest decisions that impact the outcome of a project occur. And we believe that through the use of technology, we can enable our users to make better, more informed pre-construction decisions, the net result of which is to make the world a better place. We're excited to announce our partnership with Niche. And one of the things that really excites me is bringing pre-construction professionals the opportunity to get certified in our latest product, Destiny Estimator. It's our belief that if we can help you understand how integrated pre-construction and pre-construction data lifecycle can benefit your business, it will ultimately improve the pre-construction services that you bring to your customers. And we'd like to announce that we're going to be releasing this at the end of Q1, and it's available to anybody that's a friend of Niche.
Chris Sammarco, welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Thank you for having me again today. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, you were that good the first time, Chris. We had to get you back. The numbers of downloads on your episode are through the roof. So we said, you know what? Let's get some more of Chris. They can't get enough of you.
That's great to hear.
Good, man. Well, it's hard to believe. We had first talked to you in September 6th. 2021. Now it literally feels like that was 3 or 4 months ago, but it just shows you how quick things move in pre-construction and how things are moving forward. 2021, that was your first episode. So I want to kind of, for anybody that hasn't had the chance to listen to that, let's just get a quick bio of you. Give us an indication of where you're at, who you're working for, and what you're up to at the minute.
So, short summary, I'm in my 23rd year of pre-construction. I'm presently the pre-construction manager for DPR Construction, covering New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Quickly growing region here, same with the pre-con team, and that sums it up. That's the short version.
Brilliant. I love it. And since we last spoke, I know that you're kind of expanding your area as well and your job responsibilities, and we're going to get into that in great detail. But in since September 6th, give us an idea, update on what's been happening, because I know you've grown your group, your team, but you've also, and listen, everybody knows, 2022 was incredibly challenging. Between supply chain issues, price of materials, economic stability, it was all in there. So give us an idea of how you kind of navigated that and any lessons learned.
Well, I guess if we go back to when I started with DPR in 2020, first we were in the middle of the pandemic, which was a little odd at the time. I started out pretty much doing what I was doing in my prior life, mostly estimating before we built the team. It was myself and one or two others, and then slowly blossomed into being a leader, to having a group of approximately 12 people now. Lots of things to tend to daily, make sure everybody's taken care of is the number one priority now, rather than having my pencil on the paper every day. But my pencil will always be on the paper, so.
Yeah, you got to keep the numbers right, don't you? And within, since you joined in 2020, what about supply chain? How did you guys navigate that? How did it come? How did you guys stay focused, deal with clients, deal with the insecurity and the risk of projects?
So internally, we have a supply chain team that tracks everything weekly. Trends in the industry, manufacturers, material pricing, that's a high-level summary. They get pretty detailed. For this region, in the tri-state area, for us, we were getting the wheels turning towards what we are now, which is, probably $500 million region. So a lot of these projects were just getting started in pre-construction. So we missed the first part of that locally. We're dealing with it more now, and more late last year as projects started moving forward a little bit further. So I guess the short answer is if you have a two-year project and you have materials that are 2 years out, a year out, you have a little bit more leeway. So we were fortunate to get ahead of that due to some of the timelines. There are some temporary options that were put in place, like, temporary roofing while you're waiting for roofing, which was a really long lead time up until more recently. So we skated around it a little bit. And then some of the timelines on some of the longer projects enabled us to still meet the schedules.
Brilliant. Yeah. So you touched on something there. The larger projects, it was probably easier to navigate. I mean, you hear some horror stories of switchgear taking 2 years to come through, and along with other materials. But the bigger projects, you were able to navigate that a little bit more. Whereas if it had been an 8 or 9 month kind of quick turnaround project, then you would have been in bother.
Yeah, I even like in the fit out world, if you have a 16 week schedule, which we use it regularly in some of my prior lives, you have to do temporary measures, temporary lighting, you have to leave ceilings out, you have to wait for millwork, either that or extend the schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of those are done in a live environment as well, where you've got kind of half of somebody's office or somebody's hospital or retail area, yeah, kind of cordoned off. Yeah, it must have been a tough year for fit out.
I've even heard like in a hospital project where there was a certain type of window that was required and they couldn't open because the window was just so many months out that they had to do something temporary but couldn't officially open because they needed that as part of the requirement. So there have been cases where, openings have been delayed due to certain materials that were absolutely necessary for the function of the project.
Absolutely. And then obviously economic stability. We're all aware that the war in Ukraine, how that's affected the price of diesel, the price of everything, really. How did that play out over the last year? And I know it's still playing out right now.
So it seemed like the escalation at one point got out of control with certain trades, fuel, roofing, just to name a few. I think it's come back down to earth more recently. There still is the inflation risk with certain materials. Like I just got a notice that drywall, certain materials are going up 20%. But I think for the most part, the escalation is a little bit more certain. Subcontractors are willing to guarantee pricing for longer periods of time now. and sometimes hold pricing for the entire duration of a 2-year schedule at this point. Whereas prior, we would have had to negotiate a breaking point in that schedule where we might be liable for paying for escalation.
Brilliant. Yeah. And again, it comes down to your relationship with the subcontractor and the client. I mean, that's probably been really evident over the last 2 years.
Yeah. Having the local relationships has certainly helped. And that's the short answer.
Yeah, big time. No, I see it all over the country. And then one thing that you mentioned there in your short bio is how you've grown the team. And you've really stepped into that pre-con lead position. How difficult was that? How have you managed it? What were the lessons learned? Creating your own culture, that driven mentality that you have internally. I know that everyone loves to hire mini me's. Have we got a whole lot of Chris Sammarcos running about up there?
So we have, we have a gamut of personalities. They're all great. Everybody has something different to offer. We have some people who are lightning quick, some who move a little bit slower, some who are more analytical. And I think the team that we've built here, just every piece of it kind of fits together like a perfect puzzle. And that came from being very selective on the people that we brought on board. So there's been people that we could certainly use, but didn't feel they were the right fit, that I decided to not bring on board. Not that they weren't great and just didn't work for the team dynamic we have. And I think a lot of what we practice daily was something that I started probably 2 years prior to coming to DPR, where a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more open, and a little less strict. You know, I used to take people to job sites or work from home day, have them train each other rather than me be hands-on all the time. And that's kind of how you build a team dynamic. Yeah, everybody work together. Everybody defends each other. Everybody's on the same team. And try not to make it such a, what's the good term? Like a meat grinder where there's a constant pressure where you feel it. I try to make it easy for them. I like everybody to feel welcome. People come in nervous. We've had interns who come in nervous and I'm like, you have nothing to be nervous about. We're here to help. It's never about finger pointing. It's about growing people. It's about training people, which I love to do. And I want to train my replacement. I want to see somebody take my spot so I can say, I helped him grow his career. I helped her grow her career and built the next generation of leaders.
Yeah. And that's almost changing the shift as well. I mean, Chris, you've been in it 23 years. It wasn't always like that. Pre-construction and estimating was the pressure cooker. I mean, you were in there, you were churning numbers. If the number was too high, you were blamed. If you won the project and you didn't make profit, you were blamed. And I think it is changing, but it is changing because of people like you who are creating a friendly culture, a flexible culture, and a culture of learning. It wasn't always like that, was it?
No, I remember some yelling and screaming, people jumping up across tables. And I remember one instance that I still talk about where somebody jumped up and screamed across the table. And I just looked at them and was like, okay. And I remember my young people that I was training at the time were like, wow, that was great. You handled that perfectly and perfectly professional. You just said, sorry you feel that way, moved on. But that was one instance that always stands out that I always tell them about when I tell them, don't get stressed out. It's all going to be fine.
Yeah, that's it. Nobody, when you've got that anxiety inside you, you don't do your best work. And flexibility. The whole talk when we're speaking with candidates and clients is about where does the flexibility start and where does it stop? But I think every individual is completely different. I'm a big believer, and I think you got to be in the war room, especially when it comes to value engineering and learning, especially as the new graduates. Where does the flexibility stop? 1 or 2 days in the office, 1 or 2 days at home? I think in and around that is nice. And what about training and development? Are you a kind of a guy, throw them into the deep end, help them along the way, or what way do you, because it's pretty evident that you've been quite successful. What's the secret?
There's a lot of different ways I train people. There was somebody who worked with us for a while who I was pretty hands-on and I'm going to say micromanagement for somebody who was brand new to the industry. I'm a little more in the background now, where I'll have some other people step forward and train people if I'm at meetings. But I also will get involved, and I'll come up and with maybe 15 items that somebody needs to look at. I always keep myself available for questions as well. So we have an open seating plan, which I like, because I like to be out there with everybody, just to have a little camaraderie, and always a wise comment that makes everybody laugh, makes everybody at ease. But I'll get in the weeds when necessary, when I have to teach somebody, but I'll also give some high level points, let them learn a little bit, but it's always done with good intentions. I want them to learn. If there's a mistake, it's always fixable. And again, back to the whole team mentality of wanting people to learn and feel comfortable while they're doing it. It's okay to make mistakes. Some of them are so trivial in the grand scheme, but people learn from them. I've seen that with some of the people I work with, where I've allowed them the freedom to make a decision. And then they see, you know, how things could certainly get out of skew, I'm going to call it, but it's not so far out of skew that it's going to damage a project or anything detrimental. So, but they learn from their mistakes. I see that as well. I see that on a daily basis.
Absolutely. It's the best way to learn. I mean, you think about the projects that went really well without any glitches, and you look back and you go, what did I learn about pre-construction and estimating, or construction about that within that project that went really well? Very little. You need to make, and anybody that tells me hasn't made any mistakes is not telling the truth. We've all made mistakes, and that's how we learn and get better. And then one thing we talked about before we started recording on air is your career back with Hunter Roberts, Structure Tone, and now with DPR. You've done a lot of lump sum estimating, and it's kind of shifted now to construction management, more on the negotiated side. Talk us through that, the lump sum side, and how have you changed to kind of adapt to more of a construction management?
So the lump sum world, that's when you wake up sweating at 1 a.m. thinking about 5 things you have to write on a piece of paper. And then you're in the office bright and early with heartburn and sweating and stressed out, trying to figure out if you're going to.
Is that what happened to hair, Chris?
Yeah, there it is. No, that just turned what was left of it gray. But yeah, we used to do a lot of lump sum bidding. It's a great way to build a team, or it could also start a war, but I think it helped build teams in the past. It gets the competitive juices flowing while you're sitting there either waiting for a result if it's like a public bid. And then if it's a private, you're obviously going to get the news and an opportunity to sometimes present on it. Totally different mentality, lowest number, you're trying to get all the scope in, everybody's running around. And I remember times being in New York at 6 a.m. and the office was already full of life and energy. So,
wow.
Versus the CM world, which is a little more calculated. You have reasonable deadlines, clients that are a little more, I'm going to say team oriented, whereas lump sum is okay, plans and specs. And sometimes it goes great. Sometimes it doesn't. CM is usually a little more slow moving and a little more calculated and focused. That would be the best way to describe it. Whereas lump sum is just get to the finish line somehow and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's more sustainable, isn't it? Really? When you think about it from a company point of view, you know, pre-construction, if you've got a 2.5-year project, it's going to be in pre-con for 12, 13, 14 months. You've got good control over it. Whereas lump sum, as you say, there's numbers in the air. It can be fast moving and probably a lot more mistakes and a lot more risk.
Oh, absolutely. I guess I've been lucky on the lump sum side. I would say that just about everything I had worked on that was won, whether it was individually or as a team, went pretty well. I think the worst was probably some break evens, but nothing that was major loss or anything that I can look back on. CM, you can pretty much guarantee, you know, results if you plan properly. So that is the key, though, planning properly out of the gate with the operations and the pre-con team, making sure that everybody is working towards the same goal. And there's a lot of different ways to do it, whether the pre-con scopes a job and feeds it to the operations team, or if the operations team wants to be heavily involved. We've done projects both ways during the last 2.5 years. It really depends on the team and the client, how busy people are.
Yeah, absolutely. And working with the operations team, I mean, I see a lot of people, and maybe you'll see it too. I see a lot of really, really good operations people moving into the pre-con side of, maybe a project executive, but coming into pre-con and really thriving. It's just that they understand the environment better, and they can see problems before they arise. And that to me can only be good for the industry, because we can build bigger, better, and safer buildings because of it. Would your operations guys get involved really, really early, or would they just come in before maybe buyout?
It depends. There was one team where I'm going to say they were heavily involved, almost a 50-50 effort. And it's one of my favorite ops teams, because they're very supportive of me and the team, me and my team. I learn things from them. I never stop learning. And they have the client and the company's best interest in mind. They want to, and they're very team oriented. So there's no finger pointing. I give credit where credit's due. I'm going to name a few people: Ryan, Chris, and Ashwin. So I know Ashwin watches the pre-construction podcast. So just had to give props to a few people in particular. So
yeah, hi to the guys. Keep it up. Keep the good work up. Keep delivering. So you mentioned there about day-to-day. It's something that I'm always asked. People always kind of text in or ring me and go, Gareth, especially young field engineers, project engineers, maybe an APM, what is the typical day of a pre-con person look like? Because they're obviously out in the field. They have a fair idea what they should be doing because of the project schedule, the plan. But they're always fascinated about a pre-construction role and what it looks like on a day-to-day basis. Now, granted, yours is a little bit more senior, but as you say, you're still in the weeds and still got the pen to the paper. So can you give us a kind of a little bit of an insight into your day-to-day?
So I think the one constant would be that I work out before work every day. That you can guarantee, that never changes.
Love it.
And that usually is anywhere between 3:15 in the morning or 4:15 in the morning, depending if it's going to be one of those 12-mile runs during the summer months or just at the gym a little bit later. That is the one constant to set myself up for success, because especially during a long jog, you get to think about everything you have to do, anything that you know, anything that might be bothering you, problems you want to solve, how you're going to solve them. You have a long time to think when you're out jogging for 2 hours. And so that is a great way to set yourself up for success. After that, the computer goes on right away. So as soon as I get in, before I even change, I put my computer on, I have my breakfast, I sit in front of the computer, and I make sure everybody on the team is set up for success. So if I need to, if it happens to be a work at home day, I say good morning to everybody, because everybody is important to me. I don't want anybody to ever feel that they're left out. Some days it becomes good afternoon because everything starts moving so quickly, but setting up the team for success is the most important thing. And then obviously looking at the meeting schedule to see what's next in the day and what the deliverables are for the coming week. And then sometimes it's drafting a plan for the following week. It's always planning ahead.
Yeah, brilliant. Love it. I love the whole working out. Now, as much as I love it, I don't think I'd be fond of a 3:15 wake up call or alarm going off. But yeah, I'm the same. Early morning. My early morning's probably around 5:30, 4:00 to 6:00. But that's early. So what time do you go to bed, Chris?
I'm going to say somewhere around 9:00, 9:15. Yeah. I find that a lot of the I'm going to say more old school, have a similar regimen. I was the person I was talking to last night. It's like, yeah, by 9:15, I'm out. And I said similar. I think I could close my eyes and probably be asleep within a minute some days.
I think that's the icing on the cake when you're able to do that at nighttime, when you're able to go to sleep. You've got nothing else to worry about. Everything else is downloaded. And I also like the idea that you've got time in the morning. I don't think enough people do that. I think everyone gets up, rushes, rushes to work. They just get in there at 8:30 or when they're supposed to be in at 8:30 or just before 9. And then they can't actually sit down and clear their mind and go, right, do a mental to-do list. I found out, I only realized that when I was 26, 27. It only kind of, the penny kind of dropped how important that time was in the morning. So any young person, that's great advice, Chris. I love it. Cool. Well, listen, Chris, I know we've gone through a lot. Is there anything else you want to kind of talk about? Because I know that from our previous podcast, you do give a lot of good practical advice. Is there anything else that you would recommend the young pre-con folk or even the folk that are out on operations or just starting out? Do you want to give them any sort of pre-construction hacks?
There is some advice that I can give to some of the younger people, especially in the pre-construction side. You know, to be successful in pre-construction, you have to live it. It doesn't mean you have to work 24 hours a day, which I've done in the past. It's not a bad thing because you learn from everything. I would say, listen to the people who are more senior. That's what I did. Sometimes it's painful. Focus. Always care about the product you put out. Keep a good attitude, keep a good work ethic. And I mean, that's the basics. Sometimes it's, you know, the industry has changed, but focus and have goals in mind. Know where you want to be in 5 years, know where you want to be in 10 years, know where you want to be in 20 years. For me, I always knew I wanted to be a chief estimator, pre-con manager, whatever the particular title was in whatever company. And that was always my focus. It was always, you know, it was estimator, and then it was the focus on senior estimator. And then after that, it became focus on being a pre-con manager. And here we are. It went by quick.
Killing it, Chris. Killing it up in the New Jersey, New York, and PA markets. And listen, just if anybody kind of wants to dig a little bit deeper on that, about the whole focus and pushing yourself, the thing that Chris is referring to, we did a great podcast on it back in September 2021. He pushed himself on a project so much that it started affecting his health. So if you're interested in that, I'll put it in the show notes down below and you can have a listen to it. Fascinating story, great project, and a great insight as well. Chris Sammarco, as always, an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Chris Sammarco, pre-con lead for DPR up in New Jersey, New York, and PA. It is your time in the hot seat. It's question time. Question number one, quick fire, please. Favorite project?
That's an easy one. I'm going to say Bellworks and Holmdel. That is always going to be one of my favorites.
Wow. Tell us a little bit more about that. Cost, size.
So without giving away too much that, you know, it's the old Bell Labs building in Holmdel. It's about a 2.5 million square foot building, worked on it with a prior company. And I use that as an example for so many things. Like we talk about building great teams. And I said, we had a great team and, you know, we built a great team. We had a bunch of guys that came together with a common goal with a fast pace. And I love the owner. He's still one of my favorite people. I'm always welcome down there to this day. Last time I went, he walked me around the building, said, here, give him a card to go show everybody around the building, you need a conference room, you want something to eat. So I'll always think fondly of that project and the owner. So
relationships, Chris, relationships. I love it. Second question, biggest lesson learned in pre-construction?
Biggest lesson learned. Wow, that's a tough one. You got me. You stumped me. There's so many things in pre-construction. You know what? I'm going to say your contacts are the most important thing in pre-construction. You know, at one point earlier in my career, I was probably less user-friendly with the subcontracting side and even nervous around the owners. But I realized everybody is trying to reach a common goal. And, you know, you become friends with people over the years. You deal with people 10, 12 years and, you know, everybody's human. So, you know, people have taken great care of me over the years, looking out for me with projects, making sure the scope was right, and, you know, always make sure that you do the right thing. So that's,
there
you go.
Love it. Network, 100%. Now, what is the hobby? How do you de-stress from work?
So I'm going to give you two answers. The obvious is we had talked about the fitness end of things. So that's how I start my day. But I'm also very involved with music, which a lot of people are shocked.
Me too.
And they find out. So I produce electronic dance music. I probably have 200 or 300 releases floating around out there between Spotify and SoundCloud.
Wow.
Still do a weekly DJ podcast. And I played live all over the world at one point, going back probably 10 years. And even, you know, in line with our uniqueness culture here at DPR, I actually played a set at a holiday party last year for an hour because it was a lot of people were curious. So,
wow.
And it went over great.
Definitely going to catch one of your gigs. I tell you what, as well, I'm going to put in the show notes, I'm going to put your blog or your Spotify thing. I want to hear some of that stuff. Love it. I like it. Favorite food?
Pizza.
Love it. Favorite sports team?
I'm going to say Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh, nice. I was in the stadium recently.
That goes back to my childhood.
Yeah, beautiful stadium. Mentor, who you want to give a shout out? Biggest influence in your career?
I can't give you one specific person, so I'm going to have to give a few names, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, first, I have to give credit to Mom. I mean, my mom is a machine. She raised me. So Mom gets credit for everything. But on a day-to-day basis, I mentioned Paul Pizarro last time.
Yeah.
Tom Merritt, who was my first boss, who I always talk the story about how my first day with him was pretty rough. It was kind of like sit down and shut up.
old school. And then, I love it.
And then I have to give credit to a gentleman named Mike Farrell, who I worked with in prior life as well. He was influential in fine-tuning me to get to where I am today. There were little things. He saw a talent that needed just to be kind of pushed a little bit in a certain direction, just little tweaks. And that's how I got to where I am today. I give him a lot of credit. So
love it. Great shout outs. What about favorite eatery and favorite pub in your local area? If you were to take a special occasion, where would it be?
Oh, wow. Being that I'm down the shore, there's so many. I could probably shorter to give you the places I don't like. But if there is probably one place that I always like to go to have a good burger in Manasquan called Harpoon Willie's. Great burgers. Always love going there.
Love it. Chris DeMarco, thank you very much. Questions answered. Hey folks, just a quick reminder about Advancing Pre-Construction 2023. It's happening in Phoenix, Arizona. It's happening on May 24th to May 26th. Now, if you're interested in going, it's the biggest and largest gathering of pre-con and estimating professionals. I'll be there and a lot of my guests will be there as well. If you're thinking about going, get over to the website, simply Google Advancing Pre-Construction. During the checkout, simply put in podcast 10 to get a 10% discount. There's also early registration discounts as well. Well, folks, what do we think of the mentality monster? he really is a driven individual. I think you'll agree that he is going to the top. He's going to be a real, real influencer leader within the pre-construction industry. We saw the soft side of him as well during the 8 questions. Really nice guy, knows how to relax, knows the importance of switching off and take easing your mind or winding down. Listen, if you have any questions for Chris, super open, super honest guy. I've got his LinkedIn profile on the show notes. I've also got his hobby. I hope you've listened to the 8 questions. Completely left field, never put him down as a DJ dance beats guy. There you are. I put his Spotify page down there as well, if you want to hit that up. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, the new format. Always looking for feedback on the 8 questions. I hope you like it. We've got some super exciting guests coming in 2023. Stay tuned.